Hi, this is Scott Hatch from Burnt Toast Vinyl, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking them how much of your time is left, ask them how much of your mind, baby. Things are much harder than the afterworld. This life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down, go crazy, punch a higher floor. You're living in. Take a look around. At least you got friends. I call my old lady. More friendly word. She picked up the phone, dropped it on the floor. That's all I heard. I'm not gonna let the elevator break us down.
Oh no, let's go.
Let's go crazy. Let's get nuts. Just look for the purpose.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. You can't even believe how weird it is that my guest this week, Scott Hatch, and I organically mentioned Prince. And then 72 hours later, the man died. I don't know what to say. I'm a little stirred up by this one. 2016, you are a vicious bitch. I don't know what's going on, but my God, Lemmy, Bowie, now Prince, Merle Haggard just died, kind of up there, but I mean, man, this has been a rough year. Heart goes out to Prince fans. I was a Prince fan. I still am a Prince fan. Total bummer. I had to lead in with the let's go crazy intro because I love it. I always kind of laugh when I hear that. Yeah, what else is going on? This is truly a terrible year. Axl is now singing for AC/DC. Seriously, I don't even know what to say to that. Oh, but anyway. This week we got Scott Hatch of Burnt Toast Vinyl. What can I say? Another rad guy I never met before. Wish I would have. I think him and I are going to be hanging out and having drinks pretty soon because he's local, and I think we have a lot more to talk about than we just covered over this next chapter of the podcast, but I hope you all enjoy it. So if you'll notice, we have a couple little clicky clicks down there on the bottom of the page when you go to the website. There's a direct way to just sign up for the email list. There's a Patreon page. Let's not forget about going on iTunes and giving reviews. You guys know how this all works. I say the same stupid crap over and over again every week because, believe it or not, it's helping. I'm getting new patrons to help out, support the show. I get a review now and again. I get a very encouraging email from people. It's getting to the point now that I can't squeeze it all in. I love that. That's awesome. If you wrote me, you know who you are. Thank you. I really honestly do appreciate it. I got 4 emails this past week. That Jason Hammaker double chapter thing blew everybody's mind. That was awesome. Thanks, Jason, for doing what you did. And thanks, Scott, for coming on this week. Talking to Scott made me feel like it was the 90s again. Get to talk about Drexel University, college radio, bunch of bands that we have all heard of, and honestly, a ton of music I've never heard of. I had to go out into the interweb ocean and find some stuff to put on today's show and let you guys hear everything that Scott's talking about. He's got musical depth, man. Let's roll it on over to him. Let's get going with Scott. Yeah, you can do that.
You can Google it on the internet and find out where to buy it.
Yeah, sweet. I didn't recognize one word on that bottle. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Anyhow, so it's all open fermented beer.
Okay.
And then they age it in wooden casks. And traditionally, Goose is a blend of one-year-old, two-year-old, and three-year-old beers.
Okay.
The three-year-old gives it like a real rich, like kind of funky taste.
Uh-huh.
Almost like an aged cheese would give.
Is it kind of a high octane beer? Because I know when you age them for a while, they kind of get like, it's almost like they get less boozy. It almost burns off a little.
Yeah, this is only 6%. So they brew like a pretty like drinkable beer.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, I'm not a Belgian guy. I got a... They're too like they're too fizzy, and they always remind me of like they always have like this strange hint of banana to it.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. So these are all sour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's like a fruitiness, but not really a banana taste.
You know what I'm saying though, right?
I know what you're saying. Yeah, this would have like, you know, a bit of an apple, maybe some like kind of cherry in it.
Okay. I would try that. I wouldn't commit to it. Right. I would let you pour me a small sip, and then I would hate to buy a whole bottle and be like, oh crap, now I'm stuck with it. You know what I mean?
Right on, yeah.
Very good. Got a beer man on my hands. That's good.
Oh yeah. Well, you know I'm a partner in a brewery.
No.
Maybe you don't know that, yeah.
I kind of don't know anything about you except I probably should have talked to you about 20 years ago when you started Burnt Toast. This dude's cranking out vinyl from bands that I know, bands that I like, and you live 45 minutes south of me. So,
right.
Kind of a bummer that we didn't know each other. So here you are making records of bands that I already like, and you work at a brewery. So can we be best friends?
Sure.
Sweet. There you go. It's official.
Maybe we should have met in between our houses and met at a bar to like, you know, enjoy a beer.
If I'd have known that. You want to hang up? How sure. When can you get there?
we go to Spinnerstown. You know where that's at?
Dude, I have a buddy that told me about Spinnerstown. They have like 900 taps, and he keeps saying we gotta go. I've never been there. Yeah, I could be at Spinnerstown in 35 minutes or so.
Nice. Yeah, I have a friend that lives in Bethlehem, and on Saturday night sometimes I meet him and his wife there.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like halfway.
Who is your friend in Bethlehem?
His name's Britt Rudine. He used to work where I worked.
Okay.
Yeah.
I live in Bethlehem.
Oh, right on.
Might have to tag along with him next time.
Right on, for sure.
Get out of here. What a small world.
Yeah.
How about that? So here we are with Scott Hatch, Burnt Toast Vinyl extraordinaire and a Belgian beer sipper and
nice.
cat lover, apparently. Who's the cat?
Yeah, his name's Oscar, and he apparently was lonely, and now he wants to join the fun.
That's fine. We allow cats here.
Yeah.
It's a small pet fee we have to charge in case Oscar pees on the podcast. But
right, exactly. He's housebroken.
So thanks for coming on, man. I'm stoked to talk to you because you actually came up in a conversation pretty heavily about probably pushing 9 months ago. We talked to Alan Aguirre.
Oh, yeah. No, I listened to that podcast. I learned a lot of things from that. I was impressed.
Oh, really? How about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was really good.
What did you learn? Because, I learned a lot, too. That was a wild ride. Talking to Alan for 4 hours it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of detail in the history there. It was sort of what I hoped to get from him. So, like, initially, one of my friends, Joe Keys, and I, we always talk about reissuing old records.
Okay.
And Sin Disease was, like, really at the top of the list.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the ideas is to really do this, like, as a proper, like, reissue where you have, like, extended liner notes. Like, what's the reason that makes this record really important? Okay. And I didn't know a lot about the backstory. Like, when that record came out, everything was, like, it was, like, fanzines. And they were pretty obscure, so there weren't, like, a lot of interviews with them in, like, any sort of big magazine that would have, like, an in-depth story about them. So it was always, like, you would kind of hear bits and pieces about the recording of the record, but never like, you know, put it all together in a very cohesive way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Alan's book that came along with the reissue actually goes into a lot of detail, which was really nice. But then even there are things in that book that aren't really explained as well as like when he was on your podcast and when he was on Mark Solomon's podcast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's a talker. Yeah. If you get him going. Yeah.
And I imagine like something that what is 25 years old, like you don't remember what you were doing 25 years ago. And then if somebody asks you the right question, it might trigger a memory and you remember
totally. Oh,
this story.
Yeah. That's what he said. He said, I actually, it kind of helped me to do these podcasts because he was prepping the ebook for the album. He forgot stuff, you know? And I remember, at the time, Steven, my co-host, I said, I want to call it As the Story Grows. And I said, I feel like we should ask Alan permission. Like, is that going to be weird? And he's like, no, not at all. Like, get a hold of him. So we asked him and he was like, yeah, no problem. As a matter of fact, I'm working on an ebook called As the Story Grows right now. So he was working on that. And I was like, is that cool? Like, I don't want to like step on toes or anything, you know? And he was like, no, go ahead. I don't care. Alan's like, got everything. But yeah, the Sin Disease was a pretty important release. And, oh man, I want so hard to not get too excited, but I have to ask, are you considering going after Alan in 2 years for Jawbone?
Well, so I do like that record, not as much as Sin Disease.
Sure.
But I'll say that we probably haven't sold as many copies of Sin Disease as I'd hoped.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad to have done it, but we're about halfway to breaking even. So,
gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
Vinyl can be a slow seller, so
sure.
Maybe that's what we have here.
Oh, man. Okay. All right.
Yeah, no, I heard you talking to Sam about Jawbone of an Ass.
Dude, I like that album better. Even Sam was like, really? Nobody ever says that. And I was like, I don't know how to explain it other than, like, Sin Disease is one of my favorite albums, and Jawbone is one of my favorite albums, and it's two different albums. And it's,
yeah.
I don't know how to explain it, but Jawbone just scratches that weird jazzy fusion itch. I don't know, whatever. We don't have to get on that path.
Right on. But
the hell with Scattered Few. I'm not here to talk about that. again, I feel like I've heard your name come up in conversations for like, I feel like decades, literally. Mm-hmm. And then you started Burnt Toast 20 years ago, right?
Yeah. Like this July will be 20 years.
How about that? And this is the first time that I'm talking to you. Have you been on any podcasts?
No, I haven't.
Really?
Other than the Huntington's Hangout. I don't know. Does that count as a podcast? I don't know.
The Huntington, I think it counts as a podcast. The Huntingtons themselves would say that it doesn't, but I think that counts. But I never listened to that one. I didn't catch that.
It was a fun night. We were just reminiscing and remembering the good days.
They're bonkers.
Yeah, they're great so guys.
Fun. Yeah. Did you listen? Have you heard the when we talked to Mike?
Oh yeah, I listened to that one. Yeah.
Oh, right on. Yeah, that was fun. I can't believe that guy has what an amazing story. Works writes music for the army. I was like, what? Yeah. That's a thing.
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, I want to talk. I want to hear your story, man. I want to hear how. Sure. You moved to the greater Philadelphia area in 1996.
Well, I moved in 1991 to go to college. So I went to Drexel, and that's where the Drexel U song that the Huntingtons wrote comes from. because in the heyday,
oh really,
I would do all these shows at Drexel, like in the cafeteria.
Okay.
Sort of I'd reserve the room. Initially we had bigger rooms, and then it was harder to kind of fill them, but the cafeteria was a little easier for us to set everything up and accommodate people.
Sure. And there's snacks. No, I'm kidding.
Well, the cafeteria was closed, but yeah.
I know.
we could trash the place and no one would really care too much.
So you moved here in 91 to go to Drexel. You started Burnt Toast in 96. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I understand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Actually, when I graduated, I got a scholarship my senior year, and I'd already paid for that semester. So I used that like $3,000 to put out 3 7-inches. So
nice.
So somehow through Drexel,
Back then, I guess it probably didn't take 6 months to get a record done either, right?
No. It was like more on the order of like, I want to say 3 weeks.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And it was that way probably until about 2006, 2007. You could get a record pressed pretty quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
What changed around then?
Probably Record Store Day is like a big deal.
I'm so glad you said that. We just had today is... We're talking on the, is today the 18th?
Mm-hmm.
So Record Store Day just happened 2 days ago. And I read an article from the lead singer of Nails. You ever hear Nails?
No, I don't think so.
Super heavy, aggressive band. The lead singer was like, yeah, Record Store Day sucks. I hate it. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why 5 years ago when we went to put out a record, we sent it away in January and it was out in March. Mm-hmm. And now we send it away in January. It comes out in August or something. And he's totally. Like, Record Store Day is really kind of clogging everything up to, you know, like every day, everybody has like this hashtag, every day should be Record Store Day thing. And we can piss and moan about all the negatives of it and everything. Mm-hmm. I get it. It causes a clog. But how does one running a label adapt to this weird, vinyl is such a strange, enigmatic kind of a, it's always sold, but it was never as popular. I mean, it was more popular then, and now everybody says it's making a resurgence. But I mean, is it really that much of a resurgence, or is it? Are you seeing the trend in what you do?
Well, there was a switch around that time too, where like mail order, I used to sell like actually CDs through the mail along with LPs, but now probably 99.5% of my mail order is all LPs.
Really?
Occasionally somebody will order a CD, but it's really rare.
Okay.
And in fact, I probably sell more tapes now than I sell CDs.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I think it has to do a little bit with like the Malcolm Gladwell like long tail idea, right? Uh-huh. Where everything gets into this like kind of niche market, and everything, like there's a lot of collectors that are willing to pay a lot more money to kind of have you know, a special item.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of paying like Ian MacKay $10 for a Fugazi LP, you're going to pay Bjork $40 for her like special, like, you know, LP.
Right? Sure.
Because you're a collector and you want the vinyl, and like you might buy, you know, 20 records in a year. So $40 isn't a big deal.
Right.
Whereas in like the, you know, the 80s or 90s, like a lot of times the vinyl would be a couple dollars cheaper than the CD. So like if you wanted to experiment with music and save money, you would just buy the vinyl. It was almost like the cheaper alternative.
Interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was cheaper.
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah, from Discord in like, I don't know, 1991, right? If you bought Fugazi, it was like $12 on CD and $10 on LP, or maybe it was 10 and 8. I can't remember.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Save a couple of bucks. It's interesting.
Huh. No, I never thought of that. I never heard anybody say that before. I never realized it was... Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because I guess in 1991, I was listening to garbage and I was buying my music at the mall. So, you know, paying $18.99 for a new CD didn't faze me. That's how much this stuff costs. You know what I mean?
Right, totally.
And I wasn't a vinyl guy until later. So, yeah, I specifically remember walking past Nirvana Nevermind. And it was the Lehigh Valley Mall, and they had the wall. Do you remember that store?
Oh yeah.
And they had a wall. Everybody called it the up wall and the down wall, the upstairs or downstairs.
Oh.
They had two in the mall. Wow, I remember going to the upstairs wall, and I walked past Nirvana Nevermind hanging on the wall, and they had the little stickers over the baby's junk. They had some amazing sort of little censorship. Yeah. And I remember walking past those and be like, who the hell buys records? I bought Nevermind on cassette because I was a cassette kid. Oh my God, I had tapes out the wazoo. And yeah, I remember looking at it on the wall and looking back now. If I'd have known, I'd have picked up like four of them, you know? But,
totally. It'd be cool. Worth some money, yeah.
What'd you go to school for?
So I went, I graduated with a degree in chemical engineering.
Okay.
And so like I work for a drug company during the day. So since graduation, that's what I've been doing. So I'm, you know, an engineer at a drug company.
Okay.
Which is, you know, why I came to Drexel. But then as soon as I, you know, started going to Drexel, there was a radio station. So I joined the radio station, WKDU, and I had my own record or my own radio show. And, you know, you start off as like a little bit of a hazing where you have to do a 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. slot where no one's listening. And a lot of times we'd be off the air. So it's just like kind of the rookies fill in the dead air.
Dude, I've been saying it for years. The new mailman always gets the shitty route.
Yeah, totally. And then I, you know, worked my way up to doing like midnight to 3 a.m. or 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Okay.
So, like a little bit better, but not all that great. And so, you know, just spending 3 hours like trying to play different records or whatever.
Okay. What kind of stuff? Like put us in the time space.
Well, so I would have been around that time. I would have, you know, gotten into Sin Disease, you know, and I would have been going to like I grew up in small town Indiana.
Okay.
And so I would have gone to the Christian bookstore and played all the demo tapes to find out all the weird, like metal and weirdo, like indie rock stuff.
Right on, dude.
Just like, you know, listening in there for like 2 or 3 hours while the, you know, sweet old lady at the counter would like, you know, ring up my, you know, Vengeance record or, you know, whatever, and not even scoff. Just like, oh, it must be good.
we have it
in the store.
It's in here, so okay. Right.
So I have this whole TED Talk idea worked up about Christian music, but I will say this. In 1990 or 1991, in Marion, Indiana, the coolest place to buy music was the Christian bookstore. Like hands down.
Okay. I mean,
there was the music land at the mall. I don't know that. And otherwise you had to like mail order stuff.
Yep.
And so, you know, as you start digging into those demos, you would find like all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, and that was kind of the era where it's like, it's the Crucified. Some of that fringier stuff is happening. And then right around that time is when the label Blonde Vinyl started, you know, so there's Lifesavers Underground. There's Breakfast with Amy. There's Fluffy. All those like kind of crazy bands, and like, you know, I would just like save up my money and like every week go buy like another record or two.
Okay.
And so, you know, just kind of feeling it out to see what I liked and, you know, amassing a collection. So a lot of that, you know, stuff I would end up playing on the radio station.
Let me interject when cassettes eventually kind of wore out, not wore out physically, but I mean when it got to the point that band wasn't popular anymore, mm-hmm. or they weren't really selling anymore, did your Christian bookstore sell the demo tapes even cheaper?
Like, I don't know, $3 or $5. Yeah, and I would
that's haul. What's up.
Yeah,
I used to go in there and just bomb the place. I'd walk in with $30, clean them out. I'd be like, I'll take this Believer Sanity Obscure and all your demos. All of them. Totally. I'll just take them all. And I took them home. I was like, that sucks. Oh, Seventh Angel. That's not bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just totally. Kind of trolling through everything. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interject, but you totally put me back.
No, it's totally
Hackman's like, Bible Bookstore and the Provident down in Soderton, dude. Yeah, man.
Sure. I mean, and there's no shame. I mean, you're doing what every like teenage kid is going to do is just like find what they like. And the way to do it, the only way to do it is just start listening to music.
Uh-huh.
And I think what's really interesting, like if you were like a skate punk kid, right? And you grew up and all your friends were skaters, you would have listened in that era, you would have listened to like, I don't know, SOD, Social Distortion, Fugazi. I don't, you know, what all those, you know, kind of bands.
I remember Anthrax a lot.
Anthrax, like you might get into some of the metal stuff, but yeah,
uh-huh.
for the most part, there was like kind of this standard, like skate punky kind of thing, right?
Right.
And that's all you listened to. You didn't like show up at the skate ramp with a Prince record, like you get your butt kicked, right?
Right.
Maybe you love Prince. Maybe, that's awesome. But like with the
that's when it became like a guilty pleasure. You like you would go home and listen to Prince because Prince kicks ass.
Totally.
And then you like your friends would come over and you'd be like, that's my sister's tape, or you'd make something up. You know what I mean? But like totally. Kind of look left, look right, and be like, yeah, party like it's 1999. You know?
No, totally. Yeah, and then I think like in the kind of Christian music scene, a lot of those kids that like were involved, they were sort of made to do that. And so, you know, when you're in Philadelphia, like a bigger city, or even in Lancaster, where there's like shows that would go on, like all the kids would go to all the shows because that's where the boys were. That's where the girls were. And it was like kind of this weird like extension of youth group making out, but with with music. And so, you have these kids, right, that they might love The Crucified. They might love, like, Mortal. They might love Poor Old Lou. Like, all these kind of, like, weird hodgepodge things that, like, most sane music lovers wouldn't listen to. Mm-hmm. And they're getting this, like, really well-developed, like, breadth of music. Now, maybe not all of it's great, whatever your take on that is. But there's definitely an exposure to a lot of different kinds of music.
Sure.
And I think, you know, that's kind of what was really interesting. And then right around the time of Tooth & Nail starting, Tooth & Nail like started to make all of the bands on their label tour. And so that's really how I got into putting on shows, right? So it wasn't very expensive to start booking bands at the university. I mean, I had no money, but, you know, I'll pay $150 to book Focus because I'm sure we'll get enough people that like break even, and then they'll probably make a little bit extra.
Okay.
So it's like a real easy way to do it.
Gotcha. Okay. So it was more of a radio DJ started booking shows. It wasn't like I'm moving to PA to get a degree and start a label. Like it was almost kind of an afterthought.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, I had a really good friend, Mike, who actually is a partner in the St. Boniface Brewery in Ephrata. So shout out to Ephrata and St. Boniface. We would just kind of sit around the dorm room and be like, yeah, we don't really want to go to like some of the shows that all the people at the radio station are going to, like, why can't, you know, some of these bands we like, you know, show up, it would be great.
Right.
Like the very first show that I did was an LSU show. And so I was super excited to, you know, kind of set that up. So that was like 1993. And we got this massive auditorium and like maybe 150 people showed up, which is awesome turnout.
Yeah.
But not in an auditorium for like 500 people. So we learned some lessons. And then the follow-up show that I did, it was Mortal and Circle of Dust, and also in 1993, like 2 weeks after that LSU show.
Get out, dude.
Yeah.
Circle of Dust, wow.
It was, like, early on, too, that was like probably right when their record had just come out.
There's a name not a lot of people talk about.
No, totally.
I barely remember. I guess I remember them mostly from the, weren't they on the Metamorphosis comp?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I remember from that. Wow, man, you're no pun intended. You're making me dust off my brain. How you said you're an old man. You said you're 42, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, 40. That's all right.
Right.
It's nice to talk to somebody around the same age. talking to some of these bands, they're like, yeah, it's getting hard to tour. I'm 25 now. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah, totally.
they probably came to one of your shows. Because they couldn't get into the 21-year-old club, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, on Bill Power's podcast, when he was interviewing Buka from Argyle Park and who was friends with the Circle of Dust guys, he was talking about coming to Philadelphia to see shows that I put on at Drexel.
Crazy. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome.
Did you become like, I don't know how to ask this, I'll just throw it out there. Did you become like the guy, like as the bands were, if they're painting up the East Coast or coming down our way, did you become like the hub?
Yeah, from like 94 to about 97, like any of the kind of Tooth & Nail related bands, you know, we would have those bands play at Drexel. Like we had, we had Scattered Few on the Jawbone O'Manass tour. We had the Blenderhead MXPX tour in 95. You know, we would have had Starflyer, you know, right when Gold came out. Actually, like
95, that would be like Bill Power wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
The Bottle Breaker book is 7 weeks on tour in 1995.
Yeah, yeah. There's like a page mentioned on Philadelphia. Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about that? That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. talking to a legend, Scott Hatch.
It's funny.
So what kicked off the record label thing? There had to be one day where you decided, you know what, mm-hmm. I have an idea.
Yeah, so when I had some extra money, the first two 7-inches that I did were all live recordings that were recorded at shows at Drexel. And there were a lot of local bands. So I want to say the band The Julies, Mac the Coffee Man were on there. yeah, so like kind of like local. There was like one that was kind of a little more indie rock, and then there was another that was a little more punk rock. Like there was Black Cherry Soda was on there, BCS. Do you know that band?
I think the name sounds familiar, but I don't know that I've ever heard them.
Okay. So yeah, we had like the indie rock 7-inch and the punk rock 7-inch, and then I made a 7-inch for a noise band too. So
who's that?
White Trash Incorporated.
Never heard of that.
Just your cousin Steve, your cousin Steven, right?
Correct.
Yeah, he would know all about it.
Yeah, he's like a flesh and blood encyclopedia of this entire era. He knows everything.
Oh, totally.
And I don't.
Sure.
I mentioned before we used to get together for Thanksgiving, and I'd be like, you know, he lives out in the Lancaster area. And I used mm-hmm. to get together with him and be like, okay, I've been listening to all this secular bad stuff. catch me up on what's going on with the Tooth and Nail thing. And he'd be like, he knew producers, he knew labels, he knew studios and everything. And I'd be like, ah, dude, I was listening to, well, here's a new band called Meshuggah, and I'd blow his mind with that.
Nice.
We almost kind of like had our assignments with like, you go over to the Christian side, and I'll go over here into the dirty world of secular metal, and we'll kind of blend the two together. And yeah, I think we turned out all right.
No, but totally. Well, I mean, that was the nice thing about working at the radio station, because like they would just get like all kinds of like indie rock, punk rock, metal stuff. Like, so, you know, in between like playing songs on the air, I could just kind of like browse the CDs and kind of listen to like what the new things were. So like, you know, in that,
sure.
I ended up being a DJ for almost 10 years, like even after I graduated. So it was great just to kind of go and hang out. You could like listen to new records as much as you want, or kind of try them out on your radio show and kind of see if you like them.
Did you have a radio show name?
Yeah, it was called Midwestern Plane Wreck. I don't know. College radio show names are a little goofy.
Taking notes. Midwestern Plane Wreck.
I don't know why it wasn't Plane Crash, but somehow Plane Wreck sounded better.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever, dude. You named it.
Yeah, I just rolled with it. I embraced it.
I'm always looking for weird, strange, off the cuff titles, and so far that's our winner. Midwestern nice. Plane Wreck.
Nice, right. Nice.
So you had a little bit of extra money because of the way that the college semester happened to work out.
Sure.
And decided to put out a couple 7-inches. Now here's a question that I thought of for you, and this is sure. coming from an ignorant place.
Okay.
I don't understand. You're not really a record label in the sense that you're more putting out records for bands. Right?
Well, so at the moment that's true. Like early on I was putting out like albums for like kind of local bands that like kind of needed some help or needed an outlet to make their records available.
Okay.
So, you know, like it would have been like some of the early stuff. Like I ended up doing the first Huntington's Ramones cover record.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like the first actual CD that we did. And then there was mm-hmm. this kind of like emo band called Somerset that we did a full length for. Okay. And then, you know, like through the Huntingtons, like I met Element and ended mm-hmm. up doing their first EP and then their first full length. You know, and then just kind of spiraled out from there. Like, so Dennis and Whitmer was the first act that we had that actually like toured.
I remember them.
Mm-hmm. And so I met him. He lived in Lancaster at the time, and then he moved to Philadelphia. So we became like really, really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was like one of the big driving forces for us, like doing things like hiring publicists and getting distribution so our records would be in stores. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was one of those things where you just kind of like, oh, what's today's problem? Let's learn how to, you know, be an actual record label.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the new hurdle? Right. Okay. So, all right.
Yeah. And so, you know, at some point in the heyday, right, you know, there were a lot of touring bands. So like Unwed Sailor was on the label for several releases.
Nice.
Saxon Shore was on the label for a long time. And both of those bands toured quite a lot from like 2003 and 2004 until maybe 2010 pretty regularly. And Unwed Sailor is still touring from time to time, but not quite to the same level that they once were.
Right. I've never heard Saxon Shore.
Oh, right on.
Looking at your website, they look like one of your anchors. Like, you know, you've had so many releases, but you've mentioned a couple. Like, you pinpointed a couple. And I remember reading them. I was like, yep, check. At least heard of them. You know what I mean?
No, totally.
And Saxon Shore, like, I don't know that I've ever heard a Saxon Shore song.
Okay. So I'll have to get you some records.
We're going to have to, huh?
I'll have to get you some records.
Oh, all right. There you go. You can, we'll drop them off to me when we get the spinners down.
No, that sounds great. Well, and like a little interesting piece of trivia for Saxon Shore is that the original drummer to Saxon Shore was Josh Tillman, who ended up being the drummer for Fleet Foxes and is also now Father John Misty. Do you know, you maybe know that name? Maybe that's too indie for you. You're more of like a metal hardcore guy.
I go pretty heavy on the indie. I know Fleet Foxes. I don't know. Okay. What was that last one?
Father John Misty.
No, never heard of it.
Okay. All right.
Educate me.
I guess it's hard to explain. So Tillman has this like kind of sense of humor where he's almost purposely an asshole. And I think like
I like him already.
Yeah. And I think Father John Misty is him just like embracing it, where it's almost like to write these songs that are actually well-written songs. The music's actually really great, but I feel like he's giving it this like real over-the-topness that he thinks is really funny. And then the fans actually love it. That's my kind of take on it. I don't know how authentic, you know, music criticism wise that is, but it's
okay.
Yeah. Check some of it out. And he really kind of hams it up live. It's, I don't know. It's almost like he makes fun of himself by just pushing himself as far as he can.
I think I could dig it. Yeah, it's almost a comedic satire with music kind of a vibe.
But then I think like a lot of his fans, they actually really like it. And okay. I'm not sure if they all get that angle or they don't mind that angle. I don't really know. I'm definitely fascinated by him. He's great.
If you're fascinated by him, then we got to put him on here. Jesus Christ, girl. What are people gonna think when I show up to one of several funerals I've attended for Grandpa this week with you, with me? Someone's gotta help me, Dave. Someone's gotta help me, Dave. Good
and,
stuff. All right.
Yeah, and also Christian Vargo from Scientific, he was also in the Fleet Foxes. So we've had two alumni members of Burnt Toast Vinyl bands that were in the Fleet Foxes.
Nice.
So
okay,
that's something.
That is something. That's not too indie for me, Scott
right
Hatch.
Right on. Sounds good.
I do get it. I do the metal.
Right on.
But yeah. I definitely my indie sides were not. Are these Christian artists that you're mentioning that you just rattled down?
That's probably not a very good description.
Not necessarily. Okay, just checking
because
I didn't really do non-metal when it came to the religious side of music, because
okay,
most of it didn't impress me. Okay. That's a big painting with a broad brush. That's a dick statement. And I know that I have a couple albums over there that are going to make a hypocrite out of me, but mm-hmm. for the most part, I wasn't into the indie rock punk tooth and nail stuff. I just kind of felt like,
okay,
it's okay. Some of it's okay, but they're singing about their girlfriends a lot and I don't care. You know what I mean?
Right on.
But, okay. If I was going to go indie, it was what everybody listened to. It was Fugazi. It was, mm-hmm. you know, like, old REM, whatever.
Sure.
You know, that college rock kind of stuff. But I missed a lot. But I mean, you can't listen to everything, you know.
Sure. Yeah, you know, and for the most part, like our record label wasn't really run as any sort of like, you know, Christian record label. So there were some folks that were kind of involved in the label that, you know, that would have that kind of bent, but you know, there was no like requirement.
Gotcha. Good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Where'd you come up with Burnt Toast Vinyl as a label, as a name?
Oh, well, actually, when I was booking shows at Drexel, for some reason I started a zine to go along with it, and the zine was called Burnt Toast. So the record label makes sense to be Burnt Toast Vinyl. To be honest, I don't know where the title Burnt Toast came from. I just thought maybe it was funny. I don't know. It was the 90s. It's weird, man.
Dude, it was the 90s. The only reason I ask is because when I heard Burnt Toast Vinyl as a name, I went, okay. Like, whatever. Then I saw the logo with the two flaming records poking out of the toaster, and I was like, hell yeah, dude, that's awesome. Like, the logo, like, the rug tied the room together, you know what I mean?
No, totally.
Yeah, totally digging it. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're in far, you know, too far that you can't really change the name and, you know,
right.
Whatever. So you make peace with it. It's fine. It's all good.
I have to imagine there's a lot of bands out there that are like, it's too far now. Like, we're in now. We have to stick with Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, totally.
We're 90s, stuck with this
again.
Shitty name. Yeah, whatever. Cool, man. It's the 90s. I'm going to write that down, too, as an alternate title. It's the 90s. It's the 90s. Good stuff.
Yeah, so maybe something like a little more up your alley. Like, so your cousin, he ended up playing as an opening band for Roadside Monument when they played in my apartment in West Philly. So like,
wow.
In this second floor apartment, there are probably 50 people at about 3 p.m. because for some reason it was like an afternoon show. And Jonathan Ford brings up his, like, I don't know, it must have been a six speaker, like 6 15-inch speaker bass cabinet, like up the stairs to the second floor,
like a big old Ampeg or something.
Yeah, it was gigantic. Yeah,
yeah, gigantic. I remember. Yeah.
And then they just like went for it, like full tilt, like in my apartment, and it was so loud and so awesome.
How did your neighbors not complain?
So we didn't really have neighbors, but our landlord. I think we warned our landlord, and I think he and his wife were like out for the day.
Ah,
but another night. We did have a send-off when Somerset went on tour, and in the middle of the show, he came up and like yelled at us, interrupted one of the bands to sort of tell us to turn it down. And then went downstairs, and we heard him and his wife have an argument about, you know, he didn't really want to yell at us, but she wanted him to.
Right.
So, you know,
you go being, take care of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, you know, being like whatever, punk rock kids or whatever, we're just like, oh, okay, let's carry on.
Nice.
Finished out the set.
I remember my roadside story. I love this podcast because it makes me think of crazy stories, but I guess I only went to Cornerstone 3 times in my life. It was 01, 02, and 08. Mm-hmm. And it was 01 or 02 that Roadside did a reunion.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I don't remember which year it was. I think 02 sounds right. And I was there with Steven, my cousin, mm-hmm. and Tantrum was looking for a drummer. Rick Wise of Tantrum has become Ricky Huntington, right?
Yeah, totally.
Or something. I don't know what the hell is going on over there, but his Lancaster kids are all crazy. I just remember sitting there watching Roadside Monument with Steven and this kid who bust into Cornerstone because he was going to audition for Tantrum.
Oh, of the wow. Muse. Oh, that's amazing.
Yes. And at Cornerstone is when we met this guy. He's a cool younger kid, longer, curlier hair. I don't remember his name. If he's listening, I mean no disrespect, but but during the roadside reunion, he wasn't getting how like transcendent of an experience that was. It's the first time I'd ever seen him. I never got to watch an apartment show with Roadside. That's not a show you ever forget. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're watching Roadside, and this guy, because he knows I'm a drummer, he keeps asking me all these questions of like, "Hey, let me ask you something. Like artistically thinking, do you think I could get away with like playing tantrum stuff with just a floor tom? Do you really think I need all the rack toms like Rick would have and everything?" And he kept asking me all these crazy questions. And I just remember like listening to Roadside, and finally I turned to him and I was like, "Dude, you got to stop talking to me until this show is over." Never Amazing. Said another word. Never saw him again. I don't know if he went off and cried or if he like, I don't know, maybe peed my Cheerios. I don't know what the dude did, but I just remember being like, "You don't get this. This Roadside playing, and you're talking to me about shit that I don't care about. You got to stop talking to me." And he just looked at me like, "Man, I don't know what made me think of that story, but that's the only time I ever saw Roadside." Like Cornerstone has everybody remembers the Cornerstone shows as like staples. You know what I mean? Like they're super important. But in your mind, if you wind it back, the shows are terrible. The sound is bad. They're mm-hmm. under a yellow and white striped circus tent during the mm-hmm. day, and if it's at night, the lighting is bad. Mm-hmm. It's like not a great show. It just mm-hmm. it's just where the whole experience is where the memory comes from.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I remember seeing Roadside in 98. They ended up playing twice that year, and at the second show, Jonathan ripped off all four of his bass strings. That's not easy to do.
No, those are thick.
Yeah, it was impressive.
Wow.
You don't just see that in somebody's apartment.
No, you don't. Yeah.
It was special. They were pulling out all the stops, making it happen.
It's like you try to go as far as you can to whip the crowd into a frenzy at Cornerstone because you know they're not allowed to stage dive because some girl broke her neck or something.
Oh, yeah. I think that did happen. So maybe later on they had those rules.
Right. So the bands were like going as crazy as they can and the crowd's like, we can't. We're not allowed to do stuff.
Yeah, I do remember. I saw Scattered Few in 91 and like, Even Alan was like jumping into the crowd. It was awesome. Like sure. everybody, it was
back then,
circus. Yeah.
Again, I saw the Scattered Fear reunion of one of those two Cornerstones, 01 or 02.
Okay.
Not great. The drummer stopped at one point. He didn't know who he was. And the crowd was like, "Boo!"
Oh, man,
like,
that's rough. That's rough.
That was rough. It was the Omega 5 lineup. And I just remember being like, I kind of feel bad. I feel bad for the guy. But at the same time, I could swing a dead cat and hit 14 drummers that would have finished that song correctly. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, come totally. On, bro. That's a shame.
It's rough. Those are big shoes to fill.
Kind of. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is great. This is fun to reminisce. You really got my brain going with the demo, the cassette demo.
Nice.
Like I remember being big demo stickers on my cassette case.
Oh, and yeah.
I remember trying to fingernail those things off and they were all gooey mm-hmm. and gummy and I'm like trying to get the goo gone going and everything. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Oh my gosh. Totally taking me back. So what does what's on the horizon for the label?
Well, so it was a little quiet for a while. I was kind of busy with work. Probably recently in the last year or so, like things have really picked up. Mm-hmm. So we've had the first actual full length on the label, like for a band on the label, that came out this year. So there's a band from the UK called Indie Halda, and their first record came out in 2006, and this is their follow up record. Okay. And the first record was more like kind of a Godspeed influenced, like kind of post-rock instrumental record.
Cool.
This record kind of has some of that influence. And actually James, one of the main people, he sings some of the lyrics. So they actually kind of added in some lyrics in not really like a singer songwriter-y kind of way, but like, you know, kind of it fits in well with the
I know what you mean. Yeah. Sound. Sometimes instrumental bands just need vocals. It's the way it works.
Totally. Yeah. You know, like Mogwai does it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
perfect example. It kind of fits.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no rules to this stuff. And so that record came out and really in March. So that was kind of like a real big release this year. So they've been touring a lot in Europe. They've got some touring set for Asia. They're going to tour in China and Taiwan, Hong Kong. Maybe Japan. So that's going to happen a little later this year. And then I think they're going to come to the US next spring.
Okay.
So that's the first band I've had on the label that's like been actively touring in quite a while.
Are you the American label for them and they have something over there?
Yeah. So
there's
there's a label in the UK called Big Scary Monsters that put out that record.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
How did you hook up with them?
So there was some website, and it must've been in 2005 at the end of the year. I guess the Indie Halda guys had basically recorded their first record really as like maybe a demo or like a homemade release.
Okay.
And the magazine like ranked them as like one of the top 10, like, you know, records of the year. And actually Saxon Shore, The Exquisite Death of Saxon Shore was like in the top 10, which is a great like post-rock instrumental record. And I was like, oh, who's this band that's like, you know, better than Saxon Shore? I got to listen to it. So I just kind of went through and listened. And I really, really liked it and started talking to them and they were pretty excited to like, you know, try to have a label release it. And then Big Scary Monsters released it in the UK and I released it in the US and then I was the first one to do the vinyl. So basically I released that record on vinyl. So it was in an era where you may not really make your money back if you did vinyl, but I really wanted to do it. So I just sort of set out and then it ended up being like actually the biggest selling record on Burnto's vinyl.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that? You're doing something right 20 years later if you just had your biggest selling one.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's not massively huge, but, you know, they're a super successful band, great guys. So
you approach them. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, totally. I think maybe I bought the record on their website just to kind of see what it was like and hear it. And then, you know, we started talking from there.
That's cool. That's kind of neat to hear. I don't think people realize how that's how it works sometimes is actually the label was like, hey, I like your stuff. I want to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times that's kind of the best way. So a lot of times I would find bands like when Unwed Sailor or Saxon Shore would go out on tour, they would kind of funnel me things from other bands that they would play with and kind of make recommendations that way.
Gotcha.
And actually like one of the singer songwriters on my label, Bosky Brown was the name of her band. Damian Dorado discovered her and kind of like, you know, sent me all her stuff and said like, yeah, you should put this record out. And so, you know, I basically was like real into it, but I was like, Damian, if I do it, you have to like be involved when they record it. So I'll send them to Seattle and you kind of look after them and make sure everything goes well. So that, how that record came together. Yeah.
See, that became like a little community though. That's pretty cool.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. I've been saying that for 50 some episodes now. Yeah. What is the, has there been, I don't want to ask like, yeah, I do. I do want to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pass on anything that later you went, shit.
Trying to think.
Take your time. It's a podcast, buddy. We're not cutting a commercial.
Yeah. This is where we might need to edit. I forget the, let me Google really fast.
Dude, do it. It's okay. If anyone's watching the YouTube feed to this, they just have to wait. They can go have a Belgian beer.
Ah, the Decemberists. They sent me an email in 2001 after just playing a show with Esther Drang.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, I think you like put out vinyl for bands that aren't on your label. We're going to have this record that comes out. I think it was on K Records or maybe Kill Rock Stars. I forget my history. And they're like, would you be interested in doing the vinyl? And then I never replied. And that band's like massive.
Yeah, yeah. Even I've heard of them.
Yeah. You know, no regrets. You do what you do.
Yeah, yeah. Any reason you didn't reply at the time? It wasn't the right time to write a check, or just?
I mean, I didn't know who they were. Like, you know, so it was just like kind of an up and coming band. You know, like
sure,
some,
sure.
some random band. I didn't know anything about them, and I don't even think Esther Drang, like, you know, really said much about like the bands that they played with. So it wasn't a big deal.
I'm super surprised to hear that Sin Disease is a little down on numbers, but I mean, okay, it is what it is.
It could be too, like how I would have promoted it. Cause like, you know, I didn't, you know, my records just like go out into regular record stores. So it's just basically like, you know, a reissued punk rock record in a sea of records. So like, you know, people sure. may not know what it is or why they should listen to it.
So what you have sold so far is totally to Sin Disease fans.
Totally, like through mail order, but it's out of it. It's available in some record stores if they order it in.
Sure. Yeah.
So like if that music buyer like, oh, I've heard of this band. I think so. Scatterfew, they're one of those bands that if you've heard that record, you love that record.
Right.
That's the end of the story.
Period.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I personally bought two copies for myself.
Sure.
So I can hang on to one and not open it and everything. Right. And then my cousin Steven was like, dude, test pressings. And I was like, oh. And then I bought a test pressing. So I was like, nice, all right, totally. All right. Like I bought Scott a couple bottles of beer that day, period.
Nice. But, nice. That's great.
Yeah, man. It's just something that it was an event. It's an event, mm-hmm. honestly. But circling back around, I'm trying to form sure. my question. Yeah. Have there been any, I don't want to talk about the disappointments because that's kind of a shitty way to frame it, but mm-hmm. have there been any major surprises as far as like the positive spin of like, I'll help this band out. And then 6 months later, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe how good this is doing.
Well, I guess maybe the biggest surprise is like how consistently like Me Without You does for vinyl.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
They have that cult thing going though.
they really do. And I think it's interesting. They're way more popular now than, you know, 10 years ago.
For real. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, maybe here's a good story. So, I'm really good friends with Daniel Smith,
okay.
From Danielson Family. And in fact, at the moment I'm helping him run Sounds Familiar, which is his record label. And I helped start that record label like maybe 15 years ago.
His label is called Sounds Familiar.
Yeah. That's
an awesome name for a label.
And it's spelled Family R-E. So Familiar that way.
Nice.
Really, really cool. Really cool.
I get it. Clever. Yeah.
And so we had done some work together. I did, the vinyl for one of the Woven Hand records that he had done.
Right on.
And, you know, we had a lot of the same friends in New York, and, he was like, yeah, I'm working on like Sufjan's new record. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Would you be interested in doing the vinyl? And so this was right when Seven Swans was ready.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. I want to hear it. So I took it home over the weekend, and I played it for like, two or three of my really close friends that are in bands on the label. And we actually had like a serious discussion about whether or not to put Seven Swans out on vinyl. And this was right before Sufjan really like got huge and popular.
Right.
And
so yeah.
The end conclusion was like, oh yeah, we really like Sufjan. This is a great record. Even if it doesn't break even, he's a good guy. So that's, you know, worth, you know, spending our money on. And so we pulled the trigger and did like a run of 500, and then like, literally why we were like making that decision, he blew up. And then that initial order, yeah, we had to like, you know, we had to do like two really quick pressings of like 2,000 or 3,000 records.
Wow. So okay.
That was awesome.
That's a success story. Yeah. How many other people are involved with that right there? Now we're spinning off into another direction. I thought you were a one man show. I didn't know you had like people to talk to.
I am a one man show. I've got two really good friends, Matt Stone and Will Stichter, and they were both in the band Somerset that I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
They were in this instrumental improv band with me called Reels of White Softly Flow. And then those two guys joined Saxon Shore. So they've kind of been consistently like my buds on the label. So I always run things, you know, by them if I'm going to make like a big decision.
Gotcha. I read all that you just said on your label in the about under the about tab, I think.
Oh, sure. Sure.
You were in that group.
I was, I played, the keyboards mostly. Occasionally I would play the trumpet. It just depended.
Wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
Frustrated musician. I'll make my own label, right?
Yeah. No, I'm not really. So
I'm kidding.
That band started, Dennison was playing a show in Lancaster and he wanted to have somebody open up. And I had just been hanging out with him in like Seattle and Portland. And I shot a bunch of 8mm film. And I thought, oh, well, why don't I just like play some films before you play? And then it sort of spiraled into like, well, if we're going to play films, we should have a soundtrack for the films. And so we ended up playing some of that footage and then kind of making this like this band.
Wow.
So it was awesome.
Dude, man, you've just about done it all. Chemical engineer, record label, band, scored a soundtrack. And why don't you tell me a little bit about the brewery thing?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, actually, maybe I'll tie it into the record label a little bit. So I've got a lot of really good friends in Scandinavia, and I was visiting Copenhagen, and my friend Michael and I, we went to the Bickler Bar, which is like a brewer in Copenhagen.
Okay.
And as we're walking back to his apartment, Michael was like, yeah, Mikkel and I, we're like really good friends. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of the first I've heard of it. And like Mikkeler is like pretty popular. You can get it in quite a lot of bars in the United States. Like it's pretty easy to find like his beers.
Okay.
And, you know, we get back to his place. You know, it's like 1 or 2 in the morning. He emails Mikkel and kind of suggests like, oh, hey, I'm here with my friend Scott. He has this record label. He's doing all of these one-sided LP series. I think you guys should collaborate together on like a vinyl record and a beer. And I was just like, okay, yeah, you know, we've just been drinking a lot. That's kind of a funny email. We'll see what happens. By the time we like, you know, got around in the morning, Mikkel had written back and said, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's totally do it. And so then we started looking for a band. And then our friend Jan, he was in this band called Glory Box that back in the day, Mikkel and his twin brother, Jeppe, who runs the brewery Evil Twin, they would both go see Jan's band Glory Box play. And so Jan was in a new band called Ring Them Bells. And so we decided to like, you know, approach that band and like have them be the band. And then Ring Them Bells went to hang out with Mikkel for an afternoon or an evening. And they developed this Imperial Porter that had coffee in it. And that ended up being like the beer that they were going to release in conjunction with the vinyl. And since it's a one-sided LP, the B-side, I insisted that we try to put the beer recipe etched into the B-side. So so we have that like kind of etched into the B-side. And interestingly enough, John Ringhofer, who's half-handed Cloud, he has never had a drink in his life, but he did the etching for the beer recipe, which just goes to show what a stand-up guy he is.
Like an ethical stance against alcohol, and he did it anyway, or does he just not drink?
He doesn't drink. I don't know if it's an ethical. I don't know exactly the reason, but yeah, he's just never done it. And you know, maybe at this point, it's a little silly, but he doesn't want to break the rules that he's established. So I'm okay with that.
Right on.
That
no, totally and, respect that. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. And so he Super was really cool. into doing the etching anyway. And so yeah, if you get that one-sided LP, you can, and you're a home brewer, you can read the recipe and you can, you know, bring your own batch or bring them bells and drink it alongside the record.
That's badass. That's such a weird idea. Very, very specific. But the people that are into it are going to be so into it. You got them for life after that.
Right on. No, totally. The beer's great.
Dude scratched a beer recipe into a record. I happen to love beer and vinyl, so you got them, man.
Yeah, totally.
That's a great idea. One-sided vinyl series.
Yeah, totally.
Go on.
So that started with Damian Gerardo. He was going to do a 7-inch for me in like 1999, and he sort of forgot about it or never quite got around to it. He sent me 3 songs, and he wasn't quite sure they were the right ones, so we never quite finished the 7-inch.
Uh-huh.
And so then he's like, scratch that. Let's do 2 7-inches and I'll get you better material. And I said, well, if we're going to do 2 7-inches, let's just do a one-sided LP and do an etching on the B side. It'll be a much nicer thing for fans and it'll be like a cooler release. So he ended up being the first. And then I was like, oh, well, if, you know, Damien's into doing this. Let's just start asking around. So I I've probably done like 15 or 20 of them since then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which
very
is very
cool.
And it's really cool. You know, it's kind of harmless to like approach someone that, you know, who already has a record label and, you know, hey, you know, we got this like weird series thing. Maybe if you have some songs or an idea, you'd consider like, you know, doing a one-sided LP. And so it's like pretty easy to get people interested.
Sure.
Cause it's got that, super unique, tangible, like you're not looking to trump anybody to take their business. You're just trying to make something special for the fan. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the era too, like the early 2000s where it was really hard to have your vinyl made. And okay. So, you know, Damien even has a couple of records that never came out on vinyl, mm-hmm. you know, and he's like fairly well-known guy, you know, okay. these days. So, you know, it's kind of a shame that they never came out on vinyl, you know, and so by doing a one-sided LP, it's kind of supplementing that, you know, that aspect.
Right. I might not have everything out, but I did do this.
Mm-hmm. Cool. No, totally. All right. Totally.
One last question that I can think of.
Sure.
Oh,
well, I should say more about the brewery, not to interrupt your question.
Oh, I thought we were done. Go ahead.
Yeah. So then I guess from that, I met some folks in Philadelphia that were starting a brewery, and it's called Crime and Punishment, named after the Dostoevsky novel. And so they came to my house and they brought me this Belgian Strong Dark that they had done. And it was probably one of the best like Belgian style quads I've ever had in America. Like very well done. Could, you know, hold its own among all the Belgian breweries.
Wow.
You know, and just from that glass, like kind of had me sold. I was like, yeah, these guys are like up to some, you know, really good things. And I just sort of got involved and became like an investor and a partner in the brewery. So, we ended up opening last July. It's all a whirlwind, but yeah, it's been kind of a different life since that's open. We spent about a year and a half trying to get everything together to get all of our licensing and the space ready to finally open. But things are going well now. So if you're ever in Brewery Town in Philadelphia, stop in and we're there.
Chemical engineer by day, record label guy, and half brewery guy by night. do you sleep?
I do sleep.
Here and there.
Sometimes it is a little crazy. Like when the brewery opened, it was kind of a rough couple of weeks.
I can imagine.
But a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, we were so busy like the first like month we were open, and we kind of underestimated how much staff we would need that I was like working the bar taps on Friday and Saturday as like the third bartender. And I have no training other than like I had a kegerator. I know how to pour a glass of beer.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. I have the utmost respect for every bartender in America. Like after working, like it was really, really hard.
Right on, dude. Absolutely.
But we just hustled and tried to like, you know, kind of will it into existence, and it all worked out.
Good for you. You made me think of I think it was Daniel Tosh in his stand-up, one of his stand-up routines where he said, every single person should be required to work in food service for 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll realize that your freaking extra sauce is just not that important.
You gotta
cut your teeth. You know, that's what it reminded me of, because you're right. There's so many, I've watched people just thump on bartenders at 1 a.m. And it's like, dude, that guy is probably ready to throw that glass up against your head. Relax. It's just a beer, you know?
Totally, exactly. Yeah, be a little patient. It's all good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Married, kids?
Nope, not married, no kids. So, yeah. You know, anyone out there, you know, I'm taking offers.
There you go. We'll get your OKCupid profile up here on the in the show notes.
No, that sounds good. Awesome.
Okay, here's my last question.
Sure.
You're going to have to explain to my tens of listeners, what's a five-sided vinyl?
So that would be a triple LP set. And so you're talking about the Mount Erie release.
I am.
So we'll kind of connect it. So my friend Michael that I was at the Mickler bar with.
Okay.
So we had this illegal FTP sharing site where we would just put records up that we liked. And there was probably like 15 people around the world that would just kind of share these records.
Okay.
And I ended up putting up the Microphones, the Glow Part 2, which is kind of a classic indie rock record. Somebody kind of turned it on to me and I posted it. And then like immediately after I saw Phil play two shows live. And he was just finishing his record as the Microphones, that was called Mount Erie. And that was kind of his transition point. He went to Norway for like 6 months, lived in a cabin. And when he emerged, he became Mount Erie and started this kind of new career. It's amazing. And one of his first shows was in Norway, or not in Norway. It was in Copenhagen. Michael was there and he recorded the show for me. We listened back to it and we're like, wow, this is amazing. And then Michael made really good friends with Phil. Phil came to his apartment like the next day. He recorded Phil playing one of his songs, and I think maybe even played on the song, and they recorded it in his apartment. So the show, the live show, goes across five sides of the triple LP set. The sixth side has an etching, and then on the outer rim of the etching is the song they recorded together in Michael's apartment.
Wow.
That's cool. It's pretty deluxe. We don't mess around.
That's super deluxe. That's as niche as it gets, man. As niche as it gets.
No, totally.
Wow, and very cool.
It's a great sounding record too. Yeah.
Very good. I'm going to steer everybody to, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to steer everybody to the site. And man, this guy's doing a lot of special stuff. I bet you've heard of at least something that he's done. So
right on. I should make a special deal for fans listening. So if you come to the website to buy something, put in the code, we'll say FROTUS, because that's one of the episodes I listened to. Put FROTUS in as your code, and I'll give you 20% off. But don't type that on your website. If you've gotten this far to listen, I'll make you that deal.
Dig it. Oh, so I won't even write that down then.
Don't write it down. It'll just magically happen.
It's not going in the notes. There you go. If you actually listen this long, type in FROTUS, and you get 20% off.
Yeah. I did like the interview you did with Shelby. That was awesome.
Wow, what a trip. Dude, that guy is so much fun.
Yeah, he was great. And I was at the show that Steven was at Stalin.
With the mattress
13.
Fire, yeah, or whatever?
Totally, it was crazy. I lived a block away, so I would go see shows all the time at Stalin.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a great... And I would always walk in there with all these like really kind of tattooed up like punk rock tough dudes, and I would just like walk in and they'd be like, oh, must be an indie rock show tonight. Because I was just, you know... The regular looking guy.
Right. That's okay. We need that balance in those shows.
We need the balance.
Too much posturing, man, you know?
Exactly.
Too many leather coats. Ugh.
Right on.
Anyway, I think we're done here. You got anything else?
No, I mean, I should be a good label guy, and I should tell you to check out the Indie Halter record. And then also, for Sounds Familiar, I would wholeheartedly recommend Octagrate, which is Glenn from Soul Junk's like garage punk band. They're like guys in their late 30s, early 40s, and they are rocking like they are 19, and it is amazing. The songs are just, they're just insane. Like, probably my favorite live band to see, like, I don't know, ever. I don't know if that's even appropriate to say. Super great. Cool record. So, yeah, you know, those would be two things that I would definitely recommend.
Well, I mean, hey, with all due respect, not to sound ass-kissy, but for somebody that cranks out as much as you do to come with that ringing of an endorsement, yeah, you should probably go check that out, right?
Yeah. I was just in San Diego visiting and got to see him play, and it was just an amazing show. You probably shouldn't have Octagrape open up for you if you're a fan in San Diego, because you can't hang with it. They're so much better. They just blew the other bands away, and the other bands were great. Octagrape it was so good.
Who's going to step up, San Diego? Who's going to step up and let this band open for them and be like, we're tough enough, we can hang after them? Who's going to do it?
Oh, though they did open up, I want to say, for two of the Drive Like Jehu reunions. So Octagrape may not have won that night, but Drive Like Jehu. How are you going to top that?
You can't. Yeah. Are you going to the Jehu show?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Would not miss it. I never saw them back in the day. I was like way into the emo thing. But yeah, never got to see Drive Like Jehu.
I've never seen them either, but they're playing on like a Tuesday or a Thursday or something. I just don't think I can pull it off.
Oh, calling sick.
I can't do that. I can't do I'm tempted to just because I don't know when that's going to happen again, but
somebody listening is a doctor and they'll send you in with a like little slip that gets you out.
This doctor's from Minneapolis. I'm like, don't worry about that.
Yeah, it was a rare case. I'm okay now, but I did that day.
Yeah.
Killed me. It was amazing.
Understood. My man, thank you so much for your time. Honestly, it was an honor. It's so cool that you haven't really done a lot of podcasts. I love this discovery. I love kind of coming in cold and being like, I kind of don't know what the hell I'm going to go with this, but let's try it and see what grows. But
right on.
Super cool, man.
Happy to be here. It was fun talking to you. And hit me up with your address and I'll send you like a big package of stuff and you'll get tired of me.
That's not going to happen. I'm dead serious. I will save you on shipping and I'll meet you at Spinnerstown.
Oh yeah. We got to do this. It'd be great for sure.
I'm totally down with it. You can teach me which Belgian beers to drink that don't taste like fizzy banana pop rocks.
All right.
And I will take you down the bitter, crazy grapefruit IPA route. That's right.
No, I can live on that path as well. That's good. All right. Well, have a good night.
All right, brother. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.